Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 201 of Geek Town Radio. We're back this week and I have with me Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. You've recovered good from last week's quiz and 200th episode. It was fun, that. I enjoyed that episode.
It was really fun. I did really enjoy that.
So what have you been up to the last week?
I started what I'm going to call a custom FIFA season. I did this on Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. And what I mean by that is go into a career mode. You select one team in either the Premier League or the Spanish League or whatever team you want out of the teams available in the game. And you can sort of do this thing where you can swap teams out of leagues.
Oh, right. Okay.
And you can pick any team that's on the game and swap them out with anybody. What I basically did was get like all of the really small teams from the Premier League, so like Huddersfield, Burnley, Bournemouth, some of those other little ones, and take them out and put in like Barcelona, Real Madrid, and like Celtic, Rangers. And I still wanted to keep like slightly bigger teams like West Ham, Tottenham, Stoke, some of those other slightly bigger ones, the ones that are more recognizable as like, you know, not quite Chelsea, Liverpool levels of good, but like they're still pretty good Premier League teams. So I sort of kept a lot of those in and then put a lot of like Spanish teams and stuff. And like I said, some of the Scottish teams and the German teams and all those. And then I tried to set it up a couple of times because I kept thinking, oh, I've forgotten to put this team in and that. And if you don't put them in, you can never like move them unless you start a new thing. But I think I've got basically everybody who I wanted. So we've now got Premier League games, which is like Barcelona and Man United and games where, because obviously all the computer teams all play each other and you don't have any control over those, but that's all like they're competing off screen. You never see those matches. So you've got like Stoke and Real Madrid as a Premier League game and all those sorts of things. It's just quite a fun, different thing to do. I knew I could do it because I've seen the swap team option before, but I thought I'd just make it a custom league. And I'm like near the start of because I simmed the whole season because I wanted to see who would get promoted and relegated for the first season. And now I started the second one and I'm doing that as well. You can also accept a international management job and I took Portugal. So that should be pretty fun as well. But yeah, so I'm going to try and go for like everything and win. Because if you're in the Premier League, you can win it's called the Carabao Cup or something, but it's usually known as the Carling Cup. You can win the FA Cup, the Champions League and the Premier League. And I'll see which ones of those I can win. So
it's amazing the amount of customization they've got into FIFA at this point. I mean, it's been around for so long, that FIFA game. And they're sort of tiny little incremental improvements over the last sort of few years. But I play FIFA a little bit and I'll have stages where I go through it, but it's not something that I've played an awful lot. I think I've got this year's or last year's, I think, I can't remember. But I have got one of them. I played it a little bit. I'm not a big football fan anyway. So, you know, but I need to go and play around with it a bit more.
The other good thing is you can manage, obviously, the transfers. So if you, as a fan of whatever team you support, if you think, oh, I wish we got rid of these three players and I wish these three players would play for our team, you can just go in and do that.
Obviously,
providing you've got enough money. So it's quite fun to go and do that as well. Getting rid of the deadwood, as some people would call it, for the team.
Yes.
Some of the more useless players. Some move controllers. So I basically bought some on Thursday. They haven't been shipped yet, I don't think, because of Good Friday and Easter Monday and Sunday and all that sort of stuff.
These for the PSVR, aren't they?
So that you're able to have essentially two in-game hands instead of one, so you can interact with more more stuff. And there's certain games that definitely like require it more. So things like Beat Saber, you couldn't play with one.
Yes, Midge, you can play Beat Saber now.
So,
yeah.
So that should be fun.
Well worth getting.
But yeah, I've added a couple of games to my like rental list, like the Rick and Morty virtual reality thing.
Oh yeah,
that actually
not
requires
that,
two
yeah.
move things. Super Hot VR, that requires two, and obviously Beat Saber I can go in and try as well. So I'm looking forward to all that. No Good Nick, it's Melissa Joan Hart's new Netflix series. She's done well. She's probably most recognizable for obviously Sabrina, Teenage Witch, yeah, which Netflix has now got their own Sabrina. She did a sitcom very similar to No Good Nick, which was simply called Melissa and Joey, where she played as Melissa, and it was kind of the same thing where it was like the family stuff and all that, like the family sort of sitcom sort of thing. So this is kind of similar, but the twist is this 14-year-old girl called Nick. She is basically set up to be kind of like a con artist or a thief, and she's got to go into, I'll just say she's got to go into Melissa's character's house and try to steal from that family, but she's got to work her way in there so that she like says that her dad has died, and she's basically she turns up with a load of papers, and they don't know why she's there, and they have to sort of take her in. Plus you've got I think his name is Sean Astin. He played I think Sam, and he was in Stranger Things and some of those other stuff. He plays as the dad of the family, and he's more on the side of like, hey, if we've got to take this girl in, she's got no family, and we've got a perfectly good house and family, like we'll take her in, we'll try and look after her, give her the best that we can, all that kind of stuff. So they get like wormed into sort of taking her in the family, and then she's got to try and find a way of like stealing from this family while trying to live with them as if nothing's happening.
Right, yeah.
And the interesting difference to me was like where we've seen these sorts of things before is like with Heisenberg, with Walter White, who is like, what, a 55-ish year old man or whatever.
Yeah.
This can kind of completely flips it on the head, because not only is the gender different, the age is completely different. This is a 14-year-old girl that's supposed to be like, you know, in school and learning and making friends and that kind of stuff. And she's trying to do all this con artist stuff. It's very, very interesting. Quite short. It's got, say, the 8 or 10 episodes. I think it's 10, but that's quite good as well. The interesting thing is Melissa and Sean's characters, they're not really the main protagonist, because most of the scenes is to do with Nick and she's trying to get out of different situations and all that sort of thing. So that's quite interesting. Walker Stalker 2019, I meant to talk about it last week but just forgot to. Went on the 31st of March, which was the Sunday, met quite a few people there, quite a few of the actors and stuff. There was also the Game of Thrones people. They had Hodor, Bronn, the Night King. They had Tilly, Sam, and I think there was one other person, I can't remember. I think that was all the Game of Thrones people. The first actual person I met was Hodor, the guy that plays him. He was quite nice as well. Most of the people I met was quite nice, and as you know, there was the one person that I didn't get along with quite so well. I won't say their name here, obviously, and I didn't say their name in the podcast, but that was interesting as well. But it's interesting because some of the three nicest people I met were actually three of the villains. So David Morrissey, who plays the governor, he was like really nice, clearly very professional, but not like too professional in a way where he wasn't relaxed. You could tell he was relaxed and he wanted to talk and all that kind of stuff. He's also a bit taller than I expected, but he was really nice. Obviously played the governor, so a villainous sort of character. Richard, the guy who plays the Night King, again really, really nice as well. And Nikki Rapp, who voices Lily in the Telltale Walking Dead video game, she was really nice as well. So your villains aren't always the nastier people.
No.
So that was fun to do as well.
Interviewed David Morrissey. He's a really, really lovely guy. There's a video of that up on our YouTube feed if you want to go and have a look at that. But he's really, really nice.
It's funny as well, because as you go through and you look at like the boosts for different people, some of them, like obviously they're more popular than the others, and they get to a point where their crowd's so big that you can't see the actor. Wasn't a problem for Ryan Hurst, because he was taller than everybody there, basically. And then you go on the other side, because for some reason they're two rows of celebrities, and then they had this like little section over the other side with some of the others. And Kaylee Fleming, who plays the grown-up version of Judith, she's really small, so that was quite fun as well. There was actually this point where there happened to be a lot of little guys kind of dressed up as Rick, and then little girls dressed up as Judith. And this little girl was walking past. I thought, oh, it's just another girl. I'm looking to see where these people are. And then I turn around again, and then I realize that Kaylee's just like walking right past me. She was with some sort of security guards or something going off somewhere. I was like, oh, it's just another one of the girls that are dressed up as Judith. But no, it was Judith right in front of me, just strolled on past me. Not like in the way of ignoring me. She had somewhere
no,
to
no,
go.
No, she, no, was, she like, was on ignoring. The way somewhere. Yes, it is weird when that happens and people just kind of walk past. It's like, because I do press at Comic-Con, you kind of, you know, you'll go and use the bathroom up in the press rooms and it's like you'll bump into a Doctor Who or like, it's like the actual actor, you know. It's very strange. You know, you bump into Sylvester McCoy in the toilets and stuff like that. It can be very weird where you'll meet them as they're getting ferried from their desks and coming round and stuff. You know, you'll bump into people. So it's very cool. It's but I am very much looking forward to MCM Comic Con in London, which is later on next month, 24th to 26th in London. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Cool. But if you want to hear like a bit more about the Walker Stalker thing, I did a whole podcast on it. So there's that as well. And then last thing, Last of Us 2, my most anticipated game at the moment, finished filming over the last kind of week or so. What that basically means is they finished doing all the mocap stuff that they needed to do.
Yes.
It doesn't mean the game's like ready to ship because they've obviously still got a bunch of stuff to do.
Yeah.
Neil Druckmann, the game's director, tweeted out and he was like, yeah, we did like this really ambitious final shot and they had Ashley Johnson, the woman that voices Ellie, and then it's either Nolan or Troy, one of the two.
It's Troy.
Who voices Joel. They were kind of standing together in their like mocap suits with all the dots on their faces saying that they'd wrapped it up. So there was these people online saying that when they did that for the first one, the game came out like 6 to 12 months later.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would be exactly the same thing because they might have more to do or something like that. But it shows there's being progress made. So that's really good.
They're obviously, I mean, they're working on the game as we speak, obviously, and have been for years, but they've got to also kind of, you know, now merge all the mocap stuff into the characters and all that kind of thing. So, 6 to 12 months sounds about right. Hopefully that means that we should get it by next Christmas. We should have it, I would think.
Yeah, there's no particular rush for PlayStation either because they're still dominating Xbox and Microsoft with the sales and they don't need to. I mean, Days Gone's out like on Friday, so it's another exclusive for them. And then they got a bunch of VR games out this year, so... Because a lot of people are talking about like the big three games of Sony, Last of Us, Ghost of Tsushima, and Death Stranding. And I do think those games are probably next year, if not the year after. So, but there's no rush for either of the three of them. So
no.
I'd
rather they get it right than rush it out.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So for me, there's not really been much in the way of new TV for me this week, basically because I've still been going through Game of Thrones, but literally 5 minutes before we came onto recording, I finished season 7. So I am now completely up to date on, obviously I'd seen them all already, but I was on an epic run through Game of Thrones to rewatch everything. And I was trying to do it before it came back, but I didn't manage it. So, I'm only a week behind.
Came close.
Really.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
So. Came pretty close. So I've just finished watching season 7. It's a really interesting experience watching it all through as one thing. And I would advise you once season 8's finished, it's good to go back to the start. There is so much stuff you pick up that you realize is referenced much later on. There are points where you forget that characters had turned up earlier than you thought they had. And, characters were in far more episodes than you thought they were. And there's lots of things that I'd just forgotten over the kind of run of it. So it's really interesting going back and watching it all over again. I think out of all 7 seasons so far, 6 is probably the strongest.
I'd say 6 and 7.
Yeah. 6, I think 6 is probably the strongest. 7 has some good moments in it, but it's interesting. 7, if you were looking at this as a massive like movie, the season 7 really is a lot of setup for season 8 pretty much. And season 6 was the last sort of full season as well, and it's really strong. I mean, you've got the Battle of the Bastards. There's all sorts of huge elements in that season that you kind of forget about. So yeah, I mean, I think that was probably my strongest season. Interestingly, 5, the season before, it's probably the weakest.
Yeah, I think a lot of people... Was that with the sand snake stuff?
Yes, there's a lot of stuff in Dawn. It's a lot of stuff in Dawn. It's a lot of stuff with Arya in... where is it? Bravos, with the faceless men and that sort of thing. So it's an awful lot of character development and not quite so much accent. He does have Hardhome in that season, which is a brilliant brilliant episode. But I think, as I mentioned before, there was a list going around before season 8 started of, you know, if you want to catch up but don't have time, these are the key episodes you should watch. And there is one episode in season 5, which is Heart Home. And the rest of them are like, yeah, no, you don't need to watch any of the rest of these. So yeah. Well,
was that the awkward season where they realized George wasn't going to be able to progress with the books and they like had to...
I can't remember whether it's season 5 or season 6. I think season 5 was probably the last season of the... And then season 6 was when they got past the book. Although they are still using elements of the book. They're actually using bits of The Winds of Winter in the final season as well, even though he hasn't finished the book. It is The Winds of Winter, I think, the next book. But he hasn't actually finished the last book, but they are using bits out of it because George has given them the manuscript so they know what's coming on the book side, apparently. Yeah. My favourite thing, though, this week was somebody had started a GoFundMe page to get Bran a ramp to get him out of that courtyard. Because they built him a wheelchair. Nobody ever sees pushing him anywhere in the wheelchair, and you don't see him moving himself. They cut to a shot with Bran sat in his wheelchair, and like he's out by the tree, sat in his wheelchair. He's in the courtyard, sat in his wheelchair. You never see him move in it, though. I don't know whether it's because maybe the prop doesn't work. I don't know what it is, but you never see him being wheeled anywhere. It's really strange. Either that or it's jet powered or something, and they don't want to show that on screen. I don't know what it is. You see Bran sort of in these random locations, sat in his wheelchair, but you never see him moved there. You never see him move around in it. You never see them kind of, you know, him pushing himself along while he's talking to somebody. Just nothing. He's always sat in one place in his wheelchair. That's it. It's really strange. And the moment you start noticing it, it becomes odder. You know, it's like, why doesn't he ever move? So yes, it's funny. But yeah, I thought the fact that somebody set up
Now that will be in my head for the last 5 episodes.
Yeah, I know. I know. Sorry about that, but yes, it will be. But yeah, I thought it was funny. Somebody set up a GoFundMe page to get Bran a ramp. So there was that. And the other thing was the finale of Star Trek Discovery, which I thought was really interesting. It sets things up for a very intriguing new season, because given where it ends things, I probably don't want to spoil where it ends stuff. But yes, they looks like they're going to be playing around with time quite a lot in the next season, which could be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of ends the show almost setting it up like you could ignore Discovery and just go off on a like Enterprise new series of like Star Trek, the original series, but with Pike at the helm, you know? So
yeah, it's quite interesting the way they ended things and where they put specific characters. Cause I remember on my podcast on the penultimate episode, I said, one of the things to look out for, like in a season finale is like, okay, so when you set your character, because you're not in a series finale, because when you do a season finale, you need to not only like kind of conclude the arc that you're in, depending on what you want to do with that specific arc. And then you have to set up like, okay, where are these characters going next? So one of the things I was kind of looking out for is like, okay, who's going to be on what ship and where and why? Because there was the whole thing with Pike going back to the Enterprise and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's one of the things I was kind of looking out for. But I think they ended things very, very interestingly. And like you said, they did kind of set it up very interestingly for season 3. But yeah, I really quite liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, because I thought it was interesting that they started the show exploring this bit of sort of Star Trek history that has never really been explored before. But there's always been a slight problem with Discovery in that the spore drive that ship uses is an incredibly powerful weapon, potentially. And it's never been used moving forward. It was sort of a unique ship, but nothing else has ever had a spore drive in the whole of Star Trek history. So it was always a bit of an oddity, given that it's set before everything else. And they've managed to find a way of sort of explaining that and getting out of it, which I thought was quite interesting. And the fact that Discovery and the fact that Spock had a sister was never mentioned at all anywhere to anyone. And they sort of managed to explain all that. And also makes for a very interesting setup for season 3, because they've taken all the shackles off Discovery now. It can pretty much do whatever it wants, because wherever Discovery ends up. I mean, it was a really interesting way of finishing that show, because Discovery kind of goes off in one direction and kind of that's it. You don't see what's next. You don't see what's, you know, it goes, it leaves, and then you end the series on the Enterprise, which I just thought was quite interesting. It's almost set up to sort of dovetail that into the original TV show, even though, you know, Pike wasn't captain in the original. Well, he was for the first episode, but let's don't get into that. he was for the pilot, but yes. It's sort of very interesting. interesting how they ended it. But I thought it was brilliant this season. I thought it was really well done and really well put together. If you've not started watching Discovery yet, go and watch it. It's a superb sci-fi series. Regardless of whether you like Star Trek or not, it in itself, I think, is a really good sci-fi series. So well worth going to watch. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. So we start the TV and film news this week with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. There's a few UK advanced air dates and pickups that I thought were quite interesting. MyFive has picked up The Oath. MyFive is Channel 5's streaming service, basically. And unfortunately, it's run by Channel 5, which is never a good thing. But The Oath is a gang drama. It stars most notable names in it are probably Sean Bean and Katrina Law. Place your bets on whether Sean Bean gets out of the first season alive. It has been running for 2 seasons, I think. And yes, I'm not entirely sure whether Sean Bean makes it to the second season, but you can pretty much guarantee probably doesn't.
Yeah, no.
So they've picked up that, and they've also picked up a New Zealand drama called Bloom, which sounds quite interesting. It's set in New Zealand, picks up 1 year after a devastating flood kills 5 locals in an idyllic country town, but a mysterious new plant appears with the power to restore their youth. It's sort of an interesting kind of sci-fi edged small town drama, which I don't know, sounds intriguing, but it's called Bloom. That's coming reasonably soon to MyFive.
I was quite surprised to see like MyFive picking up stuff, because Channel 5 haven't picked up something in a very long time.
No.
And they've basically turned into their own sort of self-produced reality channel
in a way, which
you like that stuff, that's great for you, because they got plenty of it. But it's been a long time since I've seen like Channel 5 picks up something, so that was strange to see.
I mean, this is kind of interesting news. They seem to be pushing the really interesting dramas out onto the streaming service, which is bizarre, but that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
they have been a problem with 5 kind of picking up one season of a drama and then dropping it, and you know, so it's difficult, which makes it very difficult to be overly positive about them. And I mean, I have to say, getting the press releases from Channel 5 can be a really depressing experience when it's like Greatest Killer Bees, or you know, the shows like some ridiculous
stuff. Odd little reality thing.
These sort of World's Ugliest Child and you know, the whatever the kind of weird reality show is that they put up, and you're reading through it thinking, God, it's just, you know, pick up something decent for heaven's sake. But they now seem to have done that, and they're trying to push them out and push to the streaming service as a sort of place for original or for bought in drama, and rather than it just being a catch up service, they're pushing it as a streaming service as well. So that could be interesting. But that's The Oath and Bloom are the two that are going to be on there, and they're available to everybody as well, which is the important thing. You know, I mean, MyFive is free streaming service, so yeah, that's good news. Over on Sky Atlantic, they've picked up Big Little Lies. That's season 2 of that, and it's going to be simulcasting with the US, so 2 a.m. on the 10th of June for that, and then it will be repeated at 9 p.m. for those of you that either don't want to record it or don't want to stay up late to watch it.
Have you seen any of that?
I haven't. No, it's one that I need to go and sit and watch, because everybody tells me it's great, but I haven't.
I've seen it. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
I can't believe how much I enjoyed the first season. And given the way that they obviously end the first season and go into the second one, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do and where they take it, because there's a lot of different directions they could go.
Yeah.
So that should be really fun.
It was always planned as a limited series. It was supposed to be a one season show, and then became such a massive hit that they decided to make another one. But it was always billed as a limited series originally, because I think it was actually entered into some of the categories as limited series for some of the awards, and then they made a second season. So, but yes, 10th of June for that, 2 a.m. and 9 p.m. The Boys, which is this sort of anti-superhero drama based on a Garth Ennis comic. It's from the guys behind Preacher, Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen and Eric Kripke, who's the guy behind Supernatural, the original creator of Supernatural. It's the three of those together, so I'm very, very much looking forward to this. I love the comic book, and it seems that they are sticking somewhat to the comic book ideal of it being this group of guys that are there to take out these superheroes who are basically kind of rock star gods but are complete douchebags. Really don't care about collateral damage, think they can get away with anything because they're incredibly powerful, and the boys are a group that are funded by the CIA that are not really superpowered, but they're there to stop them and put them back in their boxes is essentially the point behind it. It looks fabulous. There is a trailer which is up on the website now. It's called The Boys, Friday the 26th of July. That is arriving on Amazon Prime. It looks brilliant.
That's a good date for that as well. It's like there's not much that happens in the summer.
I think that's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I saw the first trailer or one of the trailers a few months ago or a few weeks ago or whatever. And I was very, very interested because I remember when you and I think you and Bex spoke about it the first couple of times you mentioned it, and then there was a trailer that came out because I remember the way you described it was quite interesting, and then the trailer came out and you know matched up with everything that you said.
But it
looks like sort of superhero-esque but with its own kind of spin on it.
Yeah,
which looks interesting.
So. Yeah, it's basically superheroes, but where the superheroes are essentially the baddies in it, which I think is an interesting idea. And it's not a show for children. It's very much an 18 rated show. So you know, as was Preacher, and if you know any of the sort of Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg stuff, it's very much got similar sensibilities to something like Preacher as well. So well worth going to watch. I think that's going to be really interesting. Gotham, we haven't got an air date yet, but I'm hearing rumors it's likely to drop in early May in the UK. So it basically it's going to start running over here once it's finished running in the US. That sounds to me why they've decided to do it that way. I don't know, but that's what they're doing.
There was gaps this time, weren't there?
There were some gaps.
It was only like 12 episodes, but they made a gap in there for some reason.
Yeah, they did space it out quite a lot because it's literally only just finishing in the US. So it's been spaced out an awful lot. And I think that is probably why they left it, because there were so many huge gaps in the run. So early May, it looks like it's going to land, but that's not officially confirmed yet, but that looks like it's when it's going to land on 84.
Yeah, so because I was watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine last night there. Because
they've started trailing it as coming soon, haven't they?
And they had Gotham coming soon. Yeah.
Now we've come to cancellations. We are heading into that season where everything gets cancelled and renewed. So Fox has cancelled The Gifted and a sitcom called Rel, which we won't really talk about because it was never really aired over here. But The Gifted, I'm kind of sorry to see The Gifted go, but I'm not particularly surprised.
I thought this was it the second season or the third season it just aired.
I think it just aired.
I was really quite disappointed with it. I remember I think on one of the Geek Towns and a TV talk I did with Bex or something, I talked about it, and yeah, it just, as we got to like episode 5 and 6 and 7 and like the middle part of the season, it just really started to sort of dip.
Yeah,
so I'm not surprised that it got cancelled. Plus it seems like, because this makes me wonder about Cloak and Dagger as well, because they cancelled Marvel Netflix stuff, all that stuff got cancelled, and it will presumably move in the 2-year call off period thing. Well, maybe it'll move to somewhere else, and then they're getting rid of The Gifted, which is more associated with Fox, and maybe they'll, I don't know. It seems like they're with the extra TV stuff that they're sort of getting rid of that and focusing more on like the Disney Plus stuff, which has got your Loki and Vision and all those sorts of characters. So it feels to me a little bit like that's what Disney's maybe doing, or that's kind of what's happening.
There is a difference, I think. Cloak and Dagger is a freeform show anyway.
Yeah.
And I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is of course an ABC show. Both of those are Disney owned, so I think they're probably fine. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ends, it will end because they've decided to end it, not for any reason to do with the Fox deal or anything like that. It's run for what, 7 seasons or something. So I mean, if they decided to bring that to an end, I think it will because they've decided that it's come to a natural conclusion. Cloak and Dagger's, I think, perfectly safe where it is. If that ends, I think it would be more to do with numbers. The difficult thing with The Gifted was, apart from the fact that it was a Fox show, it was co-owned by Fox and Disney, it's now entirely a Disney show, but was still going to, if they brought it back for a new season, would have run on Fox in the US. The problem with that is its numbers were getting worse, and that's now way more important to Fox because of the fact that they're not getting anything else from the back end of it, because they now don't own any part of the show. Literally a bought in from Disney. So there's that, which is the one problem. The other problem is on Disney's side, I think it's a tough proposition because it deals with mutants. And Disney will have big plans for the mutants as part of the MCU. And do you really want a rogue kind of mutant show just still wandering around in the ether? Do you still need that,
yeah,
that sort of separate thing which is just going to muddy the waters when you're trying to create this sort of big cohesive universe? And then you've got this thing, this The Gifted, which is this thing which is kind of got mutants in it but isn't really connected to anything. That I think is going to be a problem anyway on the Disney side of things. And I sort of get it from Fox's point of view. It's a bought-in show. If it's not making the numbers, they're going to have to cancel it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. So, and like you say, I think it was... quality was slipping a bit as well. So yeah, I mean, I am a little bit sorry to, you know, it's always sad to see shows go, particularly when they're popular, but I think it wasn't unexpected. And I'm quite excited to see what Disney now do with all the mutant characters, because
yeah,
I think it's going to be far more interesting with them having them sort of tied into the MCU. Over on British channels, Dave has cancelled Zapped after 3 seasons, which, I have to admit, isn't a show I really watched. I think I saw 1 episode of it, and it was sort of a funny time travel thing about a guy who was an office worker that ended up back in a sort of medieval or sort of fantasy medieval kind of village setting with kind of wizards and warlocks and stuff. He did really well for 3 seasons. It was some of the guys from the Inbetweeners, I think.
Yeah, James Buckley, I think.
Yeah, James Buckley was the lead, I think. Yeah, I mean, It seems to have been kind of fun for 3 seasons, but they've now decided they're not going to make any more of it.
I remember seeing it pop up on some TV list somewhere and found out it was already in like season 2, and I thought, why do I not know about this?
Yeah,
this
show it's sort yet? Of, it very much flew under the radar.
If you would have got one of the Inbetweeners guys, and given the success of the Inbetweeners, you'd kind of try and shout about it. But
yeah,
I just didn't really see anything about it. So
yeah, we did mention it a few times, but it never really kind of captured the imagination as much as I think they possibly wanted it to. Fear and Null. We've got Manifest, which hasn't aired over here yet, but the fact that they've renewed it for a second season is a good sign, because it was a bit up in the air about whether they get renewed or not, because its numbers haven't been that strong, but critically it seems to have gone down quite well. This is the thing about an aeroplane which seemingly goes missing, and then sort of an hour goes by on the plane for the passengers, and yeah, they sort of land assuming the flight's landed normally, but it turns out it's like 5 years later or something. So yeah, looks kind of interesting that, and there's a lot of people been asking about, well, when's that going to air over here? And it hasn't been picked up by anybody, but I think the fact that it's now got a second season hopefully will lead somebody to actually take it. Now, Blue Blood's been picked up for a 10th season, which is the world's greatest acting moustache, which is attached to the face of Tom Selleck, that is back for its 10th season. And Good Girls has been renewed for 3rd season, which
nice.
I know you'll be very happy about.
Yeah, I loved the first season. Of course, we haven't got the 2nd season over here yet. I'm assuming they'll do the same thing, which is the box set drop.
I think they will.
The 2nd season is still currently running. I think it's on its 10th episode, roughly. So within the next month or so, we shall see.
Yeah.
But I'd heard this was like on the bubble, and then I thought, like, how is a show this good kind of on the bubble? But those things happen, and then they renewed it, so that was really good. It's good that they've renewed it before the season's like actually finished as well. Plus over here, because we haven't even seen the 2nd season yet, we know that there's like 2 sort of in the books or whatever. But yeah, obviously I saw the 2nd season trailer, and it looks like it's kind of turned into like a female Breaking Bad in a way, which sounds amazing to me. So
Good.
Really enjoyed that. That's on Netflix if you want to see that.
Yes, yeah. I watched the first couple of episodes, I think, and it slipped away from me, and I need to go back and watch the rest of it, because I did really enjoy it. It was a great show. So it's one of those things that add to my list of things that I need to go back and catch up on. I also have a few dates for you as well. As you know, we have we talk about a thing called the annual TV Bloodbath and Upfronts, which, if you're new to the podcast, we talk about this every year, and we do a lot of posts on the website around this time of year. That is when all the TV shows on the main US network get cancelled and renewed. We're about to head into May, which is when a lot of the upfronts, there's been a few upfronts already actually, but most of the main network ones are coming in May. Dates for your diaries though, if you're waiting to find out whether a show is going to be renewed or cancelled, 10th of May is probably going to be the traditional bloodbath day, which is you tend to get this flurry of like cancellations as that sort of upfront deadline arrives. wise, because most of the upfronts for the main networks are happening the week of the 13th of May. So NBC and Fox are on the Monday the 13th, ABC on Tuesday, WB and Time Warner and CBS have one on Wednesday, and CW has one on Thursday. So that's Thursday the 16th of May. So most of the main networks have them across that week, which will mean that all their shows will really, they will have announced cancellations and renewals by the 10th of May. Early May through to the 10th, you're going to see a lot of cancellations and hopefully a reasonable amount of renewals as well.
Yeah.
So be prepared that there is a lot of heartbreak probably coming in the next few weeks. If you're an avid TV watcher, Hulu have also got an upfront coming on the 1st of May, and YouTube got one coming on the 2nd of May as well. So that will be when they announce new shows and things that they've picked up that have been piloted and all that sort of stuff.
Is there anything in particular you're waiting for to get renewed? A lot of the stuff I watch has been renewed already.
Yeah, so. a lot of the stuff I watch, I mean, like CW have kind of pretty much renowned for renewing everything. So that's all been renewed. It sounds like we are getting a Batwoman series, although they haven't officially confirmed that yet, but they should either confirm that by the May 16th or before then, because it sounds like that's definitely coming. And there are a few other interesting ones in the CW, like the Lost Boys series, and there's a couple of other things as well. So not so much things waiting for a new, but there's shows that are out there that we've talked about, and pilots and stuff, that it's going to be kind of interesting to see what get picked up and what doesn't, because there's usually a bit of a surprise in some of those. So but keep an eye on the website over the next few weeks, because it's probably going to get quite frantic with renewals and cancellations and things.
The one I'm kind of, I guess, curious about is Whiskey Cavalier, because that will determine whether or not Lauren comes back to Walking Dead.
Yeah, so. There is that. That's very much on the bubble by the sounds of it. I mean, there's a lot of people seem to be saying that that could very well get cancelled. It's very 50-50, so we'll have to see. But yes, that's going to be an interesting one. And again, the fact that it's not being picked up over here yet is an interesting sign. So not necessarily a good one, but we'll have to wait and see. Moving on to other news, Pablo Schreiber, who you will know from shows such as Orange is the New Black, where he played Pornstash, and American Gods, has been picked to play Master Chief in the Halo series, which is Showtime are making at the moment. This is obviously based on the iconic Xbox franchise. He will play Master Chief, the Earth's most advanced warrior in the 21st century, and the only hope of salvation for civilization pushed to the brink of destruction by the Covenant, an unstoppable alliance of alien worlds committed to the destruction of humanity. So yeah, I mean, do you kind of excited for a Halo? I don't know whether you've played much Halo. Are you excited for a Halo series?
I looked up the story for 1 and 2. I played 3 and 4, and then played about half of 5. The consensus on 5 was like, this is terrible. And it was basically a case of like, okay, just wait for Halo 6 to come out, which will probably be a Halo Infinite. I like the series. It's pretty good. I've never been like a sort of hardcore fan of the series.
No.
But the good thing about 5 was the multiplayer was probably the best out of those games. Although 3 is quite known for having good multiplayer, which I remember playing a lot of at high school, the Halo 3 multiplayer, before everybody moved to Call of Duty, and that was the new cool thing that everybody did. But I've always kind of been saying, pretty much since The Witcher got announced for Netflix, that like, isn't it time to stop making video game films or movies, because they just are not working? And then along comes Sonic, which is having a live action of some kind made film, but anyway, which is going to have Jim Carrey in it, which I guess is good. But in terms of Halo, I think it will make for a good TV series. It's got that kind of, you know, galaxy sort of Star Wars sort of stuff in there, where there's a lot of different stories you could probably tell. I do think that Pablo's a good choice. Did he play Nicky in The Wire season 2? I think he's a good choice for Master Chief. I think that just telling a story like this, unlike The Witcher and some of these slightly longer games in a long form TV series, is a very, very good idea. I think Showtime's a good network. I think if you're going to go for something like kind of high action, like a Witcher or like a Halo, you don't really want it on like a small network sort of place.
Something
like a Showtime or Netflix or HBO or any of those sorts of bigger channels or streaming services is a good idea. So I think this could be pretty good. I've heard they've had a little bit of problem with like showrunners, but they seem to have apparently found their feet a little bit, and obviously they're doing casting now, so we'll see how things work out.
You're right, he played Nicky in The Wire. He's also popped up in like things like Weeds, and he was in the movie First Man, Skyscraper, Den of Thieves, plays Mad Sweeney in American Gods, which is brilliant as well.
So he's done a lot of good stuff then, and now he's going to jump into this. So.
I mean, it's interesting because a lot of people said Master Chief really shouldn't take his helmet off ever. So
And now you'll know what it looks like.
It almost doesn't matter whether he, I mean, if they stick to that, it almost doesn't matter what his face looks like. But it's an interesting choice for it. And he's a great actor, so I'm quite happy to see it. I think you're entirely right. You need one of those big cable networks or one of the streaming services to do this, because it was the only way, you know, it needs a lot of money throwing at it, and it was the only way it was ever going to work.
All that kind of high budget stuff. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for Showtime, because I don't remember Showtime doing, I could be wrong, but I don't remember Showtime ever doing a big kind of sci-fi thing to this extent before.
Not that I can think of either.
So Kyle Killen and Steve Kane are the two showrunners. Kyle Killen did Awake and Steve Kane did The Last Ship. So they're co-showrunners and exec producers on the series. Amblin Entertainment are involved as well, which is Amblin Spielberg, I think. Spielberg's company. So I mean, it's kind of interesting. There is a new character they're introducing, joined by newcomer Yerin Ha, who played Quan Ha, which is a new character within the Halo universe, described as a shrewd, audacious 16-year-old from the outer colonies that meets Master Chief at a fateful time for both of them. She's a new coming actor. She's Australian, earned a Bachelor of Fine Art and Acting of Australia's National Institute of Dramatic Arts. She's done a few different bits of stage work and sort of been cast on Reef Break, which is an Australian series, and was in the Sydney Theatre Company adaptation of Lord of the Flies, but I mean, really not been in many things at all. So yeah, kind of interesting, obviously a young actor, interesting role to get kind of straight off the bat, really. But
I'm pretty excited for this, plus it'll obviously have Microsoft's backing. This is, you know, their biggest IP. So that would be pretty good as well. I'm excited for it.
Begins filming in the autumn in Hungary, Budapest. So it will be at least next year, if not the year after, before we see it. More casting news. It's pretty much all casting news this week, actually. We've got Harry Treadaway, Alison Pill, and Elsa Brynäs joining Star Trek, the Jean-Luc Picard series. They still haven't officially announced a name for this yet, so referring to it mainly as Star Trek Picard, but that may not be the title of it. They're describing it as the Jean-Luc Picard Star Trek series, which is a bit long-winded. Of course, we don't know much about the show because they've not really released any details. We know they've already started doing read-throughs, and I don't know whether they've actually started filming it yet, but they're supposed to be beginning filming any moment now, so these are sort of new bits of casting. We know the plot evolves around Picard, captain of the Enterprise, him much later in life. It's after the events of Nemesis and Spock disappearing in the 2009 Star Trek movie. So it's after all those events. It's set in the Prime Universe. It's got something to do with the destruction of Romulus, or the fact that Romulus was destroyed, and that's sort of set Picard's life on a very different track from the one he was originally on. So we don't exactly know what he's doing or where he is or any of that stuff. So going to be kind of interesting, that. The actors that are joining the show: Harry Treadaway, you'll know from Mr. Mercedes. He was in that. He was in Penny Dreadful. That's probably where a lot of people know him from. He played Victor Frankenstein in Penny Dreadful. He was in the Disney feature The Lone Ranger. He's just been filming bits for The Crown, where he's playing Prince Margaret's young lover, Roddy Llewellyn. So yes, been all over the place. And that's Harry Treadaway, not Luke Treadaway, who is his twin. Luke's been in a bunch of other shows, but it's easy to get them confused. But it's Harry that's doing this. Alison Pill has just completed season one of an upcoming FX series called Devs, which looks brilliant. It's from Alex Garland. I know her mainly from The Newsroom, which was the Aaron Sorkin series, which was superb. She was been in Treatment. She was in Scott Pilgrim, Milk, American Horror Story Cult. She popped up in Hell Caesar. There's a whole bunch of different things, but she's a great actress, so I'm good to see her joining the show. And Elsa Brynäs just wrapped the first national touring company of the smash hit Hamilton. So she was in that. She was on American Crime Story Versailles as well. So yeah, she's not got many credits to her name, but the interesting new addition. They are joining previous announced cast members, which are Santiago Cabrillibe, Michelle Hurd, who people know from Blindspot, and Evan and Goria as well. You're kind of into Star Trek now, or certainly Star Trek Discovery. Is this one that you're kind of intrigued by?
I mean, I'm going to watch, because they've got a lot of different Star Trek series planned now, haven't they? CBS, because of the rights. And I'm going to watch all of them. It will depend which ones I podcast on, because it will depend when they're scheduled and whether some of them run together or whatever the case may be. But I'm certainly going to watch all of them. Hopefully they're connected in like some way, maybe. It would be interesting. They're bringing back Patrick Stewart for this
one. Yeah, they are bringing back Patrick Stewart. Is Patrick Stewart playing Picard as the age that Patrick Stewart is now, which is getting on a bit. I mean, you know, he's still fabulous and doesn't really age, but he's playing it as an older person. I think this is going to be quite interesting. It's not entirely clear whether this is going to be a one-off series or whether they're going to do more of it, but Patrick Stewart was clearly very impressed with the writing on it, and that was what sort of drew him back to it. So I'm very intrigued to see what they do with it, and it's going to be good having Picard back on screen again. So that's coming out on CBS All Access later this year. So even though they're only really shooting it now, their turnaround's fairly fast on it by the sounds of it. Shooting now-ish out later this year. I think it's fairly likely Netflix will try and pick this up. I mean, it may go to a different broadcaster.
I'd be surprised if they didn't, because they've already got Discovery in that, and it'll be useful for them as well if they have them all on the same thing.
Yeah, I think they have all the other Star Trek shows as well, because they've got like Deep Space Nine. I think they've got Next Generation on there, so it sort of makes sense.
I've seen them floating around on there.
Yeah, so it's a continuation of Next Generation, so that sort of makes perfect sense. I suspect it will go to them. And lastly, Eldon Ehrenreich has joined the Brave New World TV series. So this is the star of Solo. He will be joining USA Network's adaptation of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Brave New World, obviously classic novel. This adaptation comes from David Wiener, Grant Morrison and Brian Taylor. Set in a seemingly utopian future in society, whilst there's peace and stability, the people are drugged to stay happy and have a number of their freedoms removed, such as prohibition of monogamy, privacy, money, family and history itself. Children are created and conditioned to play a specific role in society, which is split into castes. For example, if you're born as a factory worker, you're conditioned to like living in cities and have no interest in books. As the citizens of New London, Bernard Marx and Liana Crown have only ever known the rigid social order, the perfect pharmaceutical called Soma, and a culture of instant gratification and ubiquitous sex. Curiosity leads them to explore life beyond their strictures of their society, and the two new worlders embark on a vacation to the savage lands, where they become embroiled in a harrowing and violent rebellion. Bernard and Liana are rescued by John the Savage, who escapes with them back to New London. And that's where sort of things start to go extremely wrong for the people of New London, and John starts to disrupt things somewhat. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like Ehrenreich is going to be playing John the Savage in this series. It's a really interesting idea. I think they've done miniseries and stuff of this. I don't know whether it's ever been kind of a full series before. I think they've only done kind of smaller adaptations of it. Ehrenreich, you'll know from brilliantly playing Han Solo in Solo.
Yeah,
I know Solo got a lot of stick, but I actually rather like that film.
Still don't know why.
Yeah, I'm still not entirely sure why. I thought it was really good. And I mean, there are moments where he's just channeling Harrison Ford. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. It starred as Hobie in Hail Caesar as well. He's done a bunch of other things, but this will be his first role on a TV series, apparently.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of him before Solo, but as soon as I saw like a photo of him and stuff when announced casting and that, I thought he was a great fit for Solo. I heard that they got him for like a trilogy for that, but it depends if they make them and stuff. But in terms of him doing things in between whatever happens with that, it's good to see him get like a new TV series and stuff. And I'm curious to see what else he can kind of do and that sort of thing. So I'll be keeping an eye on this, I think.
So the people behind it, as I say, David Wiener, who wrote Homecoming, The Killing, Flesh and Bone, Grant Morrison and Brian Taylor. Grant Morrison Morrison is the legendary comic book writer, Brian Taylor are the duo behind the wonderfully, gloriously insane Happy, which is a fabulous, fabulous show if you've not seen that. They're exec producing along with a couple of guys that exec produces The Americans for Amblin Television. So it's Amblin again. They're also going to be directed, or at least the first episode is directed by Owen Harris, who is the director of Black Mirror San Gioperino, which was a great episode of Black Mirror as well. So yeah, it's interesting people involved with it, I think. Don't know when that's going to come. I mean, it has been commissioned for a series. I think it's 10 episodes, I think they said. So it has been commissioned for a series by USA Network in the US. What else do they run? Suits was one of theirs, I think. And
Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot's one of theirs as well. So they do kind of some really interesting work on USA Network. Very much looking forward to seeing that. I think it will land over here, but looks really intriguing. One to look out for, don't know when, but keep an eye out for that. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The interview this week is with Nina Erb, who is the editor for such shows as Insecure, the HBO series, and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend as well, which you can catch on Netflix in the UK. She's worked on a whole bunch of other shows as well. She was nominated for an Eddie Award for Insecure. She's worked on a bunch of reality shows as well, like Dancing with the Stars, which is the US version of Strictly, Top Chef, which is basically MasterChef. She's already won herself one Emmy for working on HBO's Project Greenlight, which was the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck reality show about creating TV series, which I don't think ever actually aired over here, but really interesting to talk to her, particularly about shows which are you know, huge things like Insecure and particularly Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which has some very interesting editorial decisions in it as well, because of the fact that you're dealing with a lot of musical numbers and that sort of stuff. And with the fact that she'd done a lot of dramas and a lot of reality TV, it was quite interesting sort of about dealing with the mixture of that sort of stuff. So here's Nina Erb, editor on Insecure, editor on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. I was obviously looking you up a bit beforehand, and your bio has the best opening paragraph I've read of anything recently, which is, says, raised in an Asian immigrant family, Nina's father wanted her to be a doctor and her mother wanted to be a pianist with the LA Philharmonic. Nina wanted to be Andy Warhol. So have your parents got over it, and how did you end up getting into film editing?
They've gotten over it. It took them a while, but you know, they kind of realize, I think at first they were like, oh yeah, okay, we'll let her go do this for a couple of years. She'll get over it. It'll be out of her system. She'll come back. She'll go to school. It'll be great.
Yeah.
And then they kind of realize, oh, this is, she's serious. She's not going back to school. Okay. And, you know, fortunately they were supportive. Of course, it was always like every, you know, holiday and every family dinner, it was like, so how's it going? How much are you working? You know, are you freelance? It's still freelance. There's no staff jobs anywhere. Like, they're always trying to convince me to like rethink everything. But, you know, I think once I got the Emmy, they kind of got over it. They're like, okay.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah. So like, okay, I think you got this, you know? But yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy, you know, path. I went to art school because I thought I wanted to be an artist. And, you know, afterwards, of course, you can't really get a job because no one's going to pay you to paint or sculpt. So a friend of mine was like, hey, come work in a business. You know, you work in the art department. It'll be great. It's like you can get paid to do your art, but it's going to be different art.
Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of did that. And it felt like architecture more than fine art because you're building sets, you're painting sets. And it just wasn't like, I love the work, but it wasn't a good fit.
Right.
So I kept searching. I bounced around a little bit and eventually, you know, kind of found myself working as an associate producer. And I kind of realized, wow, this is amazing, like the power of editing, because the editor I was working with at the time, he really opened my eyes. He just showed me, I remember the first thing we were working on was a cooking segment. And I remember thinking, oh, this is going to be so boring. Like, who wants to watch these people cook, right? And he did his magic, and I was blown away. I was completely blown away. And I thought, okay, this is where the stories are put together. And this is where you can kind of, you know, shape a character or even destroy a character if you're not careful. Mm. And so I was hooked. I was hooked. I started to learn about how to use the Avid and Final Cut Pro at the time. This was a while ago. And this editor, Sven, he was so generous. He actually hired me as his assistant. So he gave me my first job. Hmm. I just kept working at it and eventually got bumped up. And I don't know, more than 15 years later, here I am.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good way to start, though. Start low and work your way up through the ranks. That's how you do it. So
yeah,
the shows you're working on at the moment, or have been working on most recently, Insecure, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Insecure's just got you a nomination for the American Cinema Editors Eddie nomination. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
You worked on Project Greenlight, which I don't think has ever actually aired over here, but I think people will be aware of it because that's the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck movie making yes. reality thing. And that one you dare me, so that's awesome. You've done things like Dancing with the Stars, which for the British people listening is basically Strictly Come Dancing in the US, Top Chef, which yes. is basically MasterChef over here. You've done some Real Husbands. I think you did a Real Housewife one as well, but you've done some Real Husbands of Hollywood and that sort of stuff as well. So you've got an interesting mix of kind of scripted stuff and the reality TV things. What are the different challenges of editing things like reality TV versus the scripted stuff? Because I'm assuming the reality stuff gets kind of more footage and you're having to craft a narrative out of nothing really with that. Whereas with the scripted stuff, there is kind of the script, though you've got something to follow.
Yeah, you summarize it exactly. I would kind of say that editing nonfiction or reality or documentary is kind of like building a house without a blueprint.
Yeah.
You're kind of having to forge for the wood and, you know, you kind of like, heck, I think this is big enough for this part right here. And you know, obviously for scripted, there's a script and there's a team of writers that have been crafting the story. And it's kind of your job to make sure that the performances, you know, help tell their story and bring the words to life. And the challenges of both are very, very different. Obviously with the nonfiction, you have to find a story out of nothing, like you mentioned. Mm. And sometimes it may not be what's most obvious. And other times there's just no story, you know, and then it's really up to you to like, think, okay, well, is there anything that's interesting here? And can I build a story around it? And would it matter to anybody else other than just me? Because yeah. I'm the only person that's been sitting with all this material, and I feel like I know all the subjects really, really well. It's important to kind of be objective. Like for Project Greenlight, there are certain things that were so fascinating, but it would be too much, we call it here, like inside baseball, because it's all about the industry.
Yeah.
And it's things that I found fascinating. But then I kind of realized, you know what, this is going to be shown across the U.S. And there's a lot of people that don't know anything about what we do. So this is not going to mean anything to them. Yeah. So it was really about like finding like something that the everyday person can kind of relate to and something that will resonate with other people for nonfiction. And I always make it a point not to put words in people's mouths because that doesn't feel good
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, no, I entirely get that. Because, I mean, with reality stuff, you are kind of almost, in some cases, probably looking for like a villain and a hero. And yeah, you're still doing that with the reality TV to a certain mm-hmm. extent. And it's how much, you know, not over influencing that, I guess, with the editing, but highlighting it without you kind of forcing a particular path on somebody, that I guess.
Right. Yes. Yes. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah. There's everybody that's watching the reality programmings are still expecting the same, you know, like you said, the villains and the heroes that they are used to seeing in a scripted programming. But sometimes it's not readily obvious, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
When it comes to the scripted stuff, I mean, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, what a wonderfully bonkers show that is. And obviously also has a lot of musical numbers in it. Does having the musical stuff add some additional challenges to editing.
Yes, definitely. You know, from having worked on Dancing with the Stars, I was used to, you know, cutting movement dance and yeah. that kind of performances. And I've done a couple of concert movies. So I was used to cutting music. And with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, musicals are part of Rebecca Bunch's fantasy.
Yeah.
And so approaching it wasn't as simple as just cutting a performance. It was like we had to establish that this we're now going to the fantasy space and then making sure that all her jokes land. And so sometimes the choreography would have to take a back seat, you know, or the cool shot might have to take a back seat because right. you're not necessarily getting the meat of the joke, I guess.
Yeah.
So, it's really making sure that the jokes come out clear and they land and it's still making it kind of entertaining too, you know, because you do still want to see, you know, the cool moves that our amazing choreographer Kat Burns have put together and you want to see the great camera work. And so it's kind of finding a balance of both. And it's a little different than just cutting a straight concert performance or a dance performance. So definitely added an extra layer of challenges, but I loved it. They were the funnest part of the job, you know, because the genres of the music numbers, they kind of ranged, you know, from like the 50s to like rock to Bob Fosse pieces to yeah. these like Disney fantasy pieces. It's whatever she can dream up for that episode. And then that was what's really fun for all of us really to edit, because it kind of got you out of not a rut, but like it challenged you,
yeah.
you know, you get to stretch a little bit. So that was a wonderful thing. I loved it.
Yeah. It must be great with a show like that, that has those sort of fantasy elements, because it does throw things at you that you wouldn't necessarily get to do in a straight drama or you know, even a straight comedy series, like the sort of Disney-esque numbers, and it's like you're suddenly getting to work on a Disney type thing, and then so that must be really fun.
Yeah, and I love the research that goes into it myself.
Are you looking at things like, you know, Disney animation and that sort of stuff when it comes to doing that sort of thing?
Yeah, I am. We had there's two pieces I can think of, and one of them, my very first musical number with the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was in season 3, and it was a very large piece with many, many dancers, background dancers, and it was a Bob Fosse inspired musical number. And so having read the script, I was like, oh, okay, I can kind of see I should look at Chicago, I should look at, you know, all that jazz, mm-hmm. and really kind of just watch those movies and seeing like how they would execute their musical numbers. And and another piece that we did was kind of like a parody on karaoke right. videos. And this is so crazy because like Asian people love karaoke, right? But I've never actually been to a karaoke bar. I've never actually done it.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, this is going to be very fascinating because I've never done this. I don't know anything about it. So, you know, going to a karaoke place and like researching the karaoke videos was fascinating to me. It's like, it's so interesting how the images never match the lyrics.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was like such valuable information because I would not have guessed that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's fabulous.
So, yeah.
Moving on to something like Insecure, which mm-hmm. you, I'm right in thinking you didn't join that until the third season.
Right.
Just joining a show later that already has a sort of established look and style and maybe, you know, way that it's been edited, does joining that make it kind of easier or harder or just make no difference at all? Are you following somebody's kind of path, or did they bring you in because they wanted it changing up somewhat?
It's for me, it was added pressure because I always feel like you can be a fan of the show, you can watch it a lot, but you don't really know all the little secrets and intricacies until yeah. you're actually there. And so even though I had been a fan of the show since the beginning, I just remember that this don't pretend like you know everything because you're not going to know until you're really there. And once I got there, there's another editor there who had been there since the pilot, Mark Sadlick, and he was a wealth of information.
Right.
If I ever had a question, like, okay, so this is shot a particular way, like, how often do I use this and what does it mean to them, you know, and he would explain all the different types of visual language that they had for the show. And it was really great to kind of have that as support. And I was fortunate enough actually to get an episode that was completely out of the Insecure language. And I remember thinking, well, this is going to be interesting. Like, how do I approach this? And I ended up cutting two different versions for this episode. The one that was, that received the ACE nomination, actually.
Right.
If you did it in the same language of the show, like for the social media graphics, when Issa was stalking Nathan, because he ghosted her. So she was like, okay, why is he ignoring me? What's happening? So she kept looking on his Instagram and refreshing the pages. And if I was to stick to the language of the show, the graphic would be shown next to her on the screen.
Right. Yeah.
So it'd be like, yeah, a little element up on the corner. But then for this one, I kept thinking, you know, I can do that. And I know this is what they're expecting to see. And it's a style that they've established, but it doesn't make me really connect with her in that moment. And I just thought, okay, well, what if we made that graphic, turn that into her POV, and it would be full screen. And so I would always start with it on the corner, so you know what she's looking at.
Right.
And then, you know, you look at her and then you look at what she's looking at, like full screen, the Instagram page, and you can see that it's refreshing and you can see that pictures, new pictures are showing up, and it's, you see her reacting to it. And I just felt that that really put the viewer more in her shoes.
And
I just felt like, you know, for this episode, because so much of it played out in her head, I just felt it was important for people to really understood like why she was obsessing over this guy ghosting her, instead of just thinking that she was just going crazy, you know. Because it's, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's understandable. Every one of us is wondering, like, well, had a great date and like, okay, why is this person ignoring me now? What's happening? You know? So it was trying to make sure that that resonated with people so that they can kind of experience what she was experiencing in the episode. And that was a complete departure from their style. And Prentice, Penny, our showrunner, they loved it. They were very supportive of the idea. And I was so glad, because that would have been really bad if they weren't supportive of it.
There is a very big creative side to editing, which I don't think always comes across to some people when you're talking about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you're not supposed to see editing. It's just supposed to make you feel.
Is there one particular sequence that you've done across your career? Is there one thing that you're really, really proud of?
In addition to Obsess Like, the episode we just talked about with the graphics, another episode, Fresh Like, is really, really special to me. It's the episode where Issa runs into Nathan at World by Tacos, and then she decides to kind of, because he's from Texas, and so she's like, oh, let me show you LA. And she's taking him all throughout South LA. And when my family and I immigrated here from Asia, we settled in Ladera, and I went to school in Inglewood.
Right.
You know, so that whole neighborhood has been very, very special to me. So it was great to see it portrayed in such a positive light, because, you know, a lot of people think, oh, South LA, that's where the hood is, you know?
Exactly.
But it's not. It's like there's these great little neighborhoods with these wonderful bookstores, and just the people are lovely. And it was great for her to kind of take him through Lamar Park and the jungles and, you know, to her kind of childhood home in the story, not her in real life. That was just really special to me for personal reason. But also it was a nice challenge for me, too, to make sure story-wise that their connection, their chemistry comes through. And also at the same time, allow the viewers to kind of experience the neighborhoods. And for that, I didn't play it very close. I kind of kept it on a looser two shot, and I wanted to make sure that I used as few cuts as possible. And I'm not even sure what inspired me to do that. I think I just decided, you know, I think this is just how it's going to go. I want to see, because they were so great together, too. It's like, I want people to see what's happening between them, almost like they're going on a walk with them. And so to see them interact unedited, it was kind of a bold choice, because, you know, most comedies, you want to control the pacing.
By cutting.
But I really felt that the more cuts I made, like the less of the background you get to see. And then I also, I mean, it would be manipulating, like, you know, their interaction, which I'm sure would have been fine too, but I just wanted to keep it a little more pure. And so my challenge to myself for that was just to make it, like, see how few edits I can make in that episode. And I think that turned out well. I think the episode was really well received. I mean, the network loved it, and I think our producers also enjoyed it quite a bit. So
that's good. It's interesting. Is there a particular fact about your job that you think might surprise some people?
That's a very interesting question. A fact about my job. I would say that the job is more similar to being like a therapist or a counselor than people realize.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. I feel like because, you know, producers and directors, I mean, being on set and shooting, it's exhausting. You know, they have long days. There's always fires to be put out, lots of drama on set. And then when they come into the editing room, I like to keep it really calm. Because they just came out of all this chaos. It's like, this should be a calm space. It should be a safe space where they feel like they can really explore their options creatively.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, you know, they really will share their concerns with certain takes and certain issues. And then they're always relieved to see that it's not really a problem.
Right.
And so I find that, you know, there's a big part of the job is kind of being a cheerleader, being a confidant. And I didn't realize that would be the case when I got into it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It just reminded me, cause I watched a lot of the behind the scenes. In fact, I watched all of the behind the scenes stuff for the Lord of the Rings movies when those came out. And there's so many shots of Peter Jackson lying on the couch in the editing room like a therapist's office.
Yes. Yeah.
So when they're editing, yes, I see exactly what you mean.
It's like they can come in here and relax and just play, you know. I think I like to think that that's a good thing for them too.
Totally. So last few questions then. What are you doing next? Have you got anything you can talk about? I know Insecure apparently is not coming back until like 2020, and then Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is finished now, isn't it? It's got,
yeah.
So you've got those both gone. So have you got anything else you can talk about?
I'm on a pilot right now that's created by Jessica Gao, and the showrunner is Larry Wilmore. They are fantastic, and this is a half hour comedy that's kind of based on Jessica's life, and it's very similar to Crazy Rich Asians, but it's not that. You know,
right? Yeah, yeah.
I'm not summarizing it right, but it was really exciting to me because the script was incredibly well written, and it's not often that I get to work on a project where the entire cast is Asian.
Right? Yeah, and, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the stories are just amazing. I mean, it's Jessica's had such an incredible, incredible life with her family. And I think she's having a great time putting her family on blast too. So, and I think right now the network is pretty excited about it. There's been a lot of talk about it in the press, and we're going to see if it gets picked up. And then after this, I'm going to Little America. I think that's what it's still called. Last time it was in the press, it was called that. It's for Apple, and the producers are Emily Gordon, Kumail Nanjiani, and Alan Yang. Yeah.
I really like the look of that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that should be interesting, right?
Yeah.
It's based off of a collection of essays on Epic Magazine, I think, about the immigrant experience. And so that should be fascinating.
Yeah, it looks wonderful. That I'm really excited to see that one. And it looks like Apple's going to be launching internationally as well. So we will actually get to see that at the same time, hopefully.
Oh, great. Yeah, that'd be cool.
That seems to be what they're planning. So I hope that will be the case. So last couple of questions.
Uh-huh.
The first question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, right now, Game of Thrones, definitely.
Yes, of course.
Game of Thrones, Atypical is another one that I love.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Big Little Lies to come back.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm loving Veep and Barry and Atlanta. And, and I quite enjoyed Umbrella Academy.
Oh, yeah. That was an amazing series. We interviewed some of the cast from that. They're wonderful as well. But
oh, nice. Yeah. Visually, it's just stunning. And it just kept me on my seat every episode. So I loved it.
And last question. If you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be? And can't be one you've worked on.
I would say if I can go back in time, I would have loved to work on The Sopranos.
Right. Yeah.
And in the future, I would love to work with Reese Witherspoon. I mean, whatever she's doing is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like if I could work on Big Little Lies, that would be amazing. But then she's also got this another limited series right now called Little Fires Everywhere. I love the book. I think I'm not even sure if they're in production or if they plan to go in production anytime soon. But that's that was one that I would have really, really loved to be a part of.
She's got an Apple show coming as well.
The
morning show, which looks really fun.
Right.
Since you're kind of doing one Apple show, maybe you can kind of hop across and jump on
exactly.
The
Exactly. Oh, that would be amazing, right?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for spending a bit of time to talk through your stuff. It's been really fun.
Oh, yeah, you've been great.
It's been really lovely to chat. I'm looking forward to seeing Little America particularly. I think that should be a great show, and got some episodes of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend to catch up on as well. So I will be looking forward to that. And Insecure's, as I say, Insecure's not back until like 2020, but it'd be great to have that back as well. So
yes. I know the fans are very upset.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Yeah. Oh, dear. It'll be good. It'll be good. It'll be worth it.
Yeah. So crafting quality takes time.
Yes, it does.
Awesome. Well, have a great rest of your day.
Well, thank you so much.
Talk to you again. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was the interview with Nina Erb. Insecure, as I think we said in the interview, unfortunately, he's not back until 2020, but previous seasons might be on Sky On Demand. You might be able to go and find them on there.
They'll be on there at some point, probably.
Yeah, they might not be there right now, but they will be floating around on Sky On Demand at some point. Mm-hmm. And Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, of course, you can get on Netflix. So go and check that out on there. On to some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week. Not many things coming back because we're in that sort of post-Easter bit. Looming Tower, which is the miniseries which stars Jeff Daniels and Peter Skarsgård, which is a drama that traces the rising threat of Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda in the late 90s and how the rivalry between the FBI and the CIA during that time may have inadvertently set the path for 9/11. It's a really powerful, really interesting series. It is actually all already up on Amazon Prime, but if you don't have Amazon Prime, really, really worth going to watch. BBC Two on 26th of April at 9:30 PM. That is arriving. That's The Looming Tower. Jamestown, third and final season of that, coming to Sky One on the 26th of April at 9 PM. Continuation of the Sky One drama about setting Jamestown in the sort of early settlers of America. I've seen a couple of episodes of this and quite enjoyed it. Again, it's another thing that goes back onto my list of things that I really need to go back and watch.
When the five DC shows? Yeah. When they all kind of go off the air, like at the end of May, when they are on breaks and stuff, that's when I kind of go to this other list sort of TV, because it just saves a bunch more time.
I'm exactly the same. Yeah. There is stuff that I end up catching up on over the summer when some of the DC stuff goes off air.
It's a good idea.
Bletchley Circle, San Francisco, which is the sort of spin-off from the original Bletchley Circle series set in San Francisco. This one, season two of that, arrives on the 26th of April at 9 PM. And there's a lot of stuff on the 26th, actually. Chambers, season one of that, comes to Netflix on the 26th of April as well. A young heart attack survivor becomes consumed by mysteries that surrounds the heart that saved his life. Looks kind of interesting, that one, but 26th of April for that on Netflix, called Chambers. And The Sun, season two and the final season of the Pierce Brosnan Western, comes to AMC Global for the seven people that own that channel in
30th. I wonder how many people do
I don't know. I mean, there probably is quite a lot of people that own it because they own BT Sport and get it
and
for free.
Big, so
it's a case of, I don't know how many people own it compared to how many people watch it, of course, but AMC Global, that's coming on the 30th of April at 9 PM for that.
And then there's also Avengers Endgame on Thursday.
And Thursday, of course, there is Avengers Endgame, which I'm going to try and get out and see it on Thursday as well, I think. So lots and lots of things to still catch up on for me, but yes, I will be going to watch Endgame. We, of course, can be back for the Game of Thrones podcast on Wednesday, which you can go and find over at Entertainment Talk. You'll find me and Matt doing Game of Thrones weekly over on entertainmenttalk.org. Go and check that out. So you can also find Matt on
Twitter at E2 Central QK. And then, yeah, getting involved with the content that we got. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming out. And Classic Reviews Season 2 is coming out soon. So,
cool.
Which is entirely under my control. So, yeah.
Go and see Matt watch movies that he calls classic and were all part of my childhood. For us, obviously, you can go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week. As I say, keep an eye on the site for the next few weeks, because it is particularly going to be a bunch of renewals and cancellations and all that stuff coming out over the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.